So when Western scholars came to India at the end of 18th century, beginning of 19th century, and discovered this language within this alphabet, they were surprised to see that there can be a systematic approach to our articulation, which nobody had any idea before. You can imagine what Western civilization is built on. Nobody had a clue how sounds are pronounced and articulated. There was no systematic overview. A, B, C, D, E, F, G gives you no clue to how we pronounce sounds and why we do what we do with our tongue, within our apparatus. Now here, for the first time, they saw this systematic approach. I don't know why it is winking all the time. I hope it will not collapse. And you can see this system in a very transparent and clear manner. And I want to dwell on it a little longer because I think this is the most crucial material for understanding of all Sparta theory, especially Varna Sparta. It's already a creation of a mind, divine mind, Indra's creation. Out of that sound he draw this particular system of this kind of articulation. If we observe our apparatus, we will see that we have only five levels of articulation and no more. Within this apparatus there are five possibilities to articulate sounds. That is back tongue, when the tongue is touching at the back. So on the one level of ka, we can articulate many different ways. Ka, kha, ga, gha, nga. Even ha is somewhere there, which is altered as non-touched semi-vowel, and ha as melted ka. If you melt ka, we will have ha. So the tongue, the back tongue, is articulating all the sounds on one level. Ka, kha, ga, gha, nga. Then we move to the palatal level. And on the palatal level, we have all other articulations by the tongue. Palate is that hard palate. Cha, cha, ja, ja, nya. Nya, nya, nya. If you try, you will understand how it works. Then we have level of cerebrals, with the heels over the teeth, where we beat it with our tongue, tatha dadhana. And then level of the dentals, tatha dadhana. And level of the labials, papha babhama. So five levels, kakha gadhana, cha cha jajhanya, tatha dadhana, tatha dadhana, papha babhama. Every level has a variety of possibilities. These varieties are similar on each level, yes? First we have consonants, touched, where there is a touch, ka, there is a touch of the tongue before the vocal cords are producing the sound. Consonants aspirated, ka, that means touch, and aspiration follows, which melts this touch and has that sandy sound of fricative, yeah? Ka. Then you have consonant voiced, and here we have a problem with Tamil people and even German people and other people who do not have very clearly defined voiced consonants. Korean people, Japanese people, they would not understand this. And I would ask you, what is the difference between voiced and voiceless consonant? And it would be quite difficult to define. What is the difference between voiced and voiceless, between ka and ga? So you have to examine it. You have to try to articulate it and see what happens. The difference is very distinct. So ka and ga, those who have these from their childhood, they immediately hear the difference. But those who don't, they don't hear. Tamil people speak with only voiceless consonants. You can hear it how they speak English also. They never say good boy, they will say good boy. Good boy. For them this good boy is the same sound. Yeah? And how they write also. If you see Ganesha is Ganesha. So K is standing for both. For K and G, the same in Japanese languages. and all those agglutinative types of languages, they do not have distinguish between voiced and voiceless consonants. In Germany, ch and j is hardly distinguished. And I hear this problem also all the time. J and ch, really difficult to define. You can, those who German here, they can really look into that issue. So what is the difference between ka and ga? Would you be able to define it?
Ga, the voice has to start first before you say the consonant.
Super. Excellent answer. The best answer I ever heard. Voice chords are sounding before the touch. Ga. You see? Ga. Before touch, the voice is kind of embracing the touch. In ka, there is a touch and voice follows. There is no embrace within the vocal cords. So this is the way how I was teaching English in Korea, because they could not really distinguish between voiced and voiceless unless they tried vocal cords before the touch. And once they did it, they could hear it for the first time in their life. But they don't distinguish. It's something which is beyond that, how they hear it.
There's another definition. You can say without voicing it at all. You can say K, let's make the sound of K without voicing it.
Right.
But you cannot make the sound of G without voicing it.
If you try, you will get ka. Yeah? If you whisper good boy, and we tried this, it's a good exercise, it's very true.
In linguistics in America, that's how they teach the difference.
Yes, I agree with you. But if you whisper good boy, and you must have this capacity to do it, so...
Even then, you're whispering, you're putting an extra vibration on the ka.
Yes.
And if you don't put that extra vibration on it, it's the same as cup.
Yes, that's what I say. You will have good boy. You will have good boy. And because there is no vocal cords, so vocal cords do not embrace the touch, then you have only touch. But there will be articulation, desire to articulate vocal cords, even in the whispering. You can make all kind of noises, all kind of varieties of allophones, whatever you want. You take any other language, French, Russian, you will have so many varieties of allophones. All those, how to say, distortions and preferences in apparatus of...
So they're not all human possibilities are not included in the system?
No, for the clicks, whispers, all kind of sounds, whistlings, you can do many things with this thing.
Tonality,
it's not an articulatory device tonality, it's some other device which is, but for the articulation of the sound, this is the system which is covering all possibilities. One possibility is not covered here, and you can see what, those who study Sanskrit, they already know it. It is that we have fricatives, but only voiceless fricatives. There can be also voiced fricatives. So it can be zha, zha, za. Zha, zha, za is not here. Why? Most probably because we have ja, and ja and zha in one language do not go together. It's a very interesting thing. You have either Jean in French or John in English, but not both. Somehow the preference is to be made there, and maybe because of economy of speech, this particular option is dropped. But if that would be the full system, there should be also voiced fricatives. Then that would be a full system of possibilities. Otherwise, these are clearly distinguished, mentally distinguished, possibilities of articulation. And I'm underlining this, mentally clearly demarcated possibilities of articulation. They are not ka, this is not ka. It is a voice, it's a back tongue, voiceless consonant. Yes? You may have a variety of those pronunciations, allophones. You can have ka, softer, stronger. In Korean there are three ka's, all different ka's. More stronger, softer, it depends how it is, how you distinguish, but it will be on the same level, the same particular type of articulation. So if I would ask you, can you make a sound, for example, voiced, palatal, aspirated? So you will try voiced, palatal, aspirated, means that has to be palatal and it has to be there, then it has to be voiced, then it has to be this, and aspirated, though it will be palatal, it is not cerebral, it will be jha. Palatal, aspirated, voiced, jha. Palatal, cerebral, aspirated, dha. And so on and so forth. Voiceless, labial, aspirated, pha. So wherever I draw my attention to articulation, there I articulate in that manner the sound. So this is not an alphabet. This is the system of articulatory devices within human apparatus. And it changes the whole view on language.
Is there a distinction between where the tongue touches the palate, whether it's the back of the tongue or the tip of the
palate? Right. Exactly.
So, where is that distinction?
Yeah, I can show you very simple. Back tongue is this, palatal is this, middle of the tongue, cerebral is the tip of the tongue, tatha dadharna, whereas chacha jajhanya is the middle of the tongue pushing towards palate, not the tip. The tip of the tongue beating over the heels is cerebral, tatha dadharna, whereas tatha dadharna, tongue touching the teeth, papha babhama. So tongue participates with back, middle, tip twice in different position. Once one is beating like this, other is touching like this. This is cerebrals, these are dentals, and then labials.
So without reading the whole book, are there just three different terms for those three tongue positions?
Sanskrit terms are kandhya, murdhanya, talabhya, Gantya and Oshtya, five levels of articulation, sthana, where we articulate by the tongue. It's only labial sound is not articulated by the tongue. All the rest are tongue articulated.
Where does this Hungarian gem come in? It's a, like,
Well, there are many sounds of this kind in all different languages, in Russian also. Tsa, where tsa comes from, what is this tsa? Yeah. So, or shcha, what would you say about this shcha? It's a combination of the sounds, the same there. It's a combination of two possibilities of articulation. Dya, 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 valodya. In Russian. What would you do with these sounds? Where do they belong in this system? Дядя Володя. Дядя Володя is Uncle Vladimir. You would not recognize that uncle in Russian. So, дя is Д, З, Y. It's three sounds which are articulated in one flow, put into one particular, and written only Dya, dya, ya, there is a ya sound in Russian, which is also a combined sound. Ya, as here we have semi-vowels. Now I want to pay your attention to this system again, because you will see that vowels correspond to these consonants on the levels of articulation. You can see a is a vibration of vocal cords, then you see e is a palatal pressure onto the palate with the middle tongue, e. Then there is re sound, this cerebral r tongue is like this, English ra, ra ra ra, because it doesn't vibrate anymore, vibrate. So it is vibrate, you can vibrate or you can lose that vibration. Then la is normal touch and u is labial. So these are simple vowel sounds which produce then combinations. So between them there will be combinations, and I will come to that. But these are simple vowel sounds on five levels of articulation. A, I, ri, li, u. These vowels produce semi-vowels. If I press E to the extent that it gives me a consonant, consonant means there will be a touch or some kind of friction which would not permit that flow. E is endless sound, yes? But if I press it to the extent that it will give me a touch, so there will be a sound. Shall we try? E. Press it to the palate will start itching. Do you feel itching palate? I'm sorry, it's a childish thing. But if you feel that itching palate, you will know exactly where E is produced. Press E to the palate until it starts itching. You feel itching palate? You want to scratch it because it is itching. It's a funny thing, but it is there where the touch is. So when I press E, I get ya. Ya is semi-vowel of E. And if I press ri to the extent that it gives me a touch, it becomes ra. Li, la, u, wa. So we have semi-vowels, ya, ra, la, va. And if I press a, to the extent it gives me a friction, it's very difficult to press it because there is no tongue participating in it. Then I use breath and I make aha. Aha is a semi-vowel of a. Clear, beautiful system, thought out to the extent, perfected. There is nothing to add to it. Of course, there are allophones. There are many different sounds in between which you can pronounce in the way and manner you like. But you will articulate in the mind these particular articulations. Yeah? And that is what is called varnaspota. You articulate these possibilities with an apparatus. How you can do it, whether you have teeth or you don't have them, to articulate dentals, it's another matter. But you will, in the mind, you will do it as dentals. Now we are coming to the vowels. If you have some questions, remarks, it's very interesting also. It's like a brain massage, I always say, to pronounce this alphabet, because it covers all possible articulations. Yes? You can go this way, ka kha ga gha na. Or you can go this way. Ka-cha-ta-ta-pa. 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 Ga-ja-da-da-ba. Ga-ja-da-da-ba. Ma-nya-na-na-ma. Ha-ya-ra-la-va. Ha-sha-sha-sa-fa. Ha-sha-sha-sa-fa. Ka-cha-ta-ta-pa. Any of those will be all the same modes or same waves of articulation. Now, there's something interesting about vowel sounds which I must mention here. It's these a, I, ri, li, u are simple sounds. They cannot be substituted because they are articulated on a particular level of articulation. But mixtures between them are quite interesting. If you remix A and E, we will have some other sound, some other sounding of vocal cords. So if I follow from A to E, I, So there will be in between that traveling, in the middle, there will be another sound, and that is A. I. So all those varieties of A and A and E in between can be used as allophones in any language. Some people prefer A, others prefer A, but it will be only on that scale different variation of that movement from A to E. From A to U, if I move from A to U labial, so I have O in between. If I move longer, if I keep longer I have diphthongs, I and ow. That's it. And there is nothing else to it.
Our question is, is it possible to copy this graph? Chart?
Yes, we can. I can print out for you if you need it. It's very logical. By the way, once you understand it once, you don't need to copy it again. Because it is only few possibilities here, and they are clearly defined. One thing you have to remember, that sound travels from A towards other sounds. A is original first sound, vibration of the vocal cords, without which there is no speech. You can't make it. So all the modulations start from A. I can press with my tongue, with lips, change whatever I modulate there. Modulated A is our speech.
In learning theory, just to say it's very logical, once you look at it, you don't need to hear it, see it, think it again. Depends upon a kind of learning modality. Some are visual, some are audio, and some are tactile. So a person who, and some are logical, those are four different learning modalities. So some people will learn this better by looking at the page, and others will learn it better by feeling the sound or hearing the sound. So it's important to recognize that not everybody learns these kinds of things the same way.
Everything is possible, whoever chooses whatever way to learn. If you have some questions, remarks of this on this system, something to say, something to ask, please don't hesitate, because I move into another section. It's maybe too elemental, something like that. It's not elemental for those who want to understand how our speech functions. It's not elemental. But without this, I don't think we can proceed much. Even if you go into syntax, what we would do with this system. So this is the basic system of first articulations made by Indra, the divine mind, clearly defined within these possibilities of this apparatus to carry out all the possible articulations. Now you will see that any other language is a kind of derivation from this system, from these possibilities. If you take English or Russian, you will find that within these 50 sounds, because if you count all of them, with long and short vowels, there will be around 50 sounds. The derivation is always like 33 the maximum in Russian and 28 in English and so on and so forth. And here I may be mistaken with English, maybe 29. But there is always a certain kind of possibility within the language which economizes on these sounds and drops many of those. Yes? Gha, jha, dha, they are not necessary in English. Between cerebrals and dentals, there is no distinction in other Indo-European languages after Sanskrit. So ta and ta, there is no distinction anymore. And I had to learn it anew, because in Russian and English there is no such distinction. and to be aware of that. It's very difficult to relearn once you learn about this in your childhood. It's nearly impossible to learn, for example, long and short syllables if you didn't have them in your native language. So Sanskrit is the greatest challenge for those who don't have the distinction between long and short syllables. I struggled with it all my life. Every time I have to be very conscious where it's long and where it's short, because if I drop it, it just becomes all the same. And it sounds weird. It's not that language.
Vriddhi.
Vriddhi and guna. There are two definitions. Guna is a, and vriddhi is a. If you add guna to any sound, you will get guna. That means a plus e gives a. A is guna of e. It's when a is mixed into e, you get a. And it's very important for derivations and for grammar later, because you will see that, for example, netram. Netram is the eye. From which root it is produced? It's guna from ni. So it is root ni which gives netram. Or nayanam. Nayanam is from ni. You can see it because a is there as guna. It's for derivation purposes. Sanskrit is very regular in grammar. It cannot produce such things like kam, kom, and then it becomes came. It can't do this. Sanskrit would never go away from O to E. Came is based on E, whereas calm, calm is based on U. So U and E are two different derivations, and there are no mixtures between the two. You would never guess that it is from the same root, calm and came. But of course later nobody pays attention to this in other Prakrit languages. So whenever you have, for example, I will give you one root and you will see how many derivations it can have. Bhu, yes? Bhu can have babhuva, abhut, bhavana, bhava, anubhava, bhavati. So all this is relating to the same bhu. You can hear this bhu everywhere, though a is mixed into it, or ni, or ji, or whatever. Nayanam, netram, neta, naitavyam. All kind of derivations from ni root. So you immediately address it to e because you see that guna and vriddhi makes changes, and they are regular. They are not spontaneous kind of new surprises in language. So, and vriddhi is when you add a long to the derivation. So nayanam or karanam. Karanam is from kri with vriddhi a. Karayati, causing to do with long a. So that's why it is a language. By the way, Sanskrit is the most A language. A is everywhere. You see that it is kind of filling in language with this A in all the derivations. A and A. That's why it sounds so A. Apyayantum mamangani vak pranaschakshushrotramatho balamindriyani cha sarvani. How many A's in this? Only few O, A, E. But Apyayantum mamangani vak pranaschakshushrotramatho balamindriyani cha sarvani. Everywhere it fills in. So now when we go into this varna as a meaningful unit and see how they build up the whole system of lexicon, we would see what it does. See, I just took a few examples here from the dictionary, Monier Willem dictionary. Ik, ink, ing, ich, it, inaksh, ind, inv, ir, ish. All starting from E. And you will see that everywhere this first meaning is to move, to go, with additional meaning which is coming from the consonant added to it, yes? So ing is already to go, or to go towards, to move, to agitate, to shake. You see, ing already has this particular connotation of shaking, whereas ik is to move, only to go. Ish is to desire, to obtain, to want, to seek, to have a tendency towards. Eat, to go. Ind, to kindle, flaming, to flame. Inv, to, it's already with the causative derivation, to press upon, to drive. Ir, to go. Ish, presayati, to throw, to promote, to cause, to move. You will see that in all those roots there are only this kind of particular power of movement and motion is expressed with all kinds of shades of meaning. Very close, standing in one cluster. They are not deviating from that meaning far away. So I'm just giving an example to see how Ivarna works. If we take this Ivarna later into grammatical operations, we also find that particular meaning there. For example, bhavati, and y-e at the end, or idam, or ida, itham, and so on, in the whole system of pointing to this particular time, actualization of this particular time, focusing us on the actual event. E has that particular formation, and that varna is working throughout all many meanings in Sanskrit language. U has another connotation. It has this duality within itself, and we were speaking last time about thou, you, yes, dvau, duality. This duality is maintained throughout, and locative case also, agnau, devau, marutau, and so on and so forth. Duality, two winds, two gods. The same tvam, you, yes? Yuyam, you. Yuvam, you too. Everywhere, who will be participating to make this connection, to make this
space
relation between you as a subject and some object which is connecting with you. Second person. So if you look into these roots, what they have, it's quite interesting, because it's a very tiring exercise for the mind which is not accustomed to think in more broader manner. So, but we will do it anyhow for the sake of looking into it for once at least. U is to call, to roar. U out, to drive, to promote, to satisfy, to be pleased with, to like, to protect, to defend, to govern, to expand, to grow. So Sri Aurobindo drops all these meanings from the dictionary and he gives to av another meaning, to increase, to make a movement of increase, to expand, to occupy the space. And all these other contextual meanings in application have the same particular meaning, significance. To protect, to defend, to govern, to promote, to satisfy. These are the meanings which can be derived from that application in a particular context. So all the words with U have a connotation of speaking, sounding. It's also interesting. From here we have Uch, Ud, Vach, all these roots. Uru, broad. Ush, to burn. Sh has this power of burning, this fricative, which adds to U, the expansion. From here, Usha, the dawn, the light of the dawn. And Uti, protection, enjoyment, also expansion. Uma, help, a companion. Ui, to weave. And you can see already this meaning, weaving within this space context. Urnu is also this which you have cover, or the web which the spider produces, is weaving the web through the space, and so on. I was just mentioning Vach, Vad, Vas, Vah. All of these have Uch, Ud, Ush. And Uh, they all have this connotation of space, to say, to tell, to speak, that means to sound within the space, yes? To sound the hearing, the space which is pervading as a hearing. Vas, to inhabit, to dwell in, to shine, to clothe oneself. Vah, to carry, to convey, to blow. So some roots of Ri family have another connotation. Ri is that, as we remember, working upon within the limit on one particular point. So Ri is breaking through, moving on, to move. First meaning is to move, but to move resisting all the obstacles, or breaking through all the obstacles, yeah? Breaking through all the resistances. Rich, to shine, to praise, from here, Rigveda. Rich, to be strong and firm, straightforward. Ringe, also, to be straight and right. Rid, to grow, to succeed. But not to grow the same like Vrid, and not the same like expand, like Uti, but differently growing. Growing with breaking through resistances. Now that particular connotation changes all the applied meanings later. So if we see Ri in other roots like Kri, Krit, Gri, Tri, Dri, Mri, Vri, you will see this context of breaking through. To make, to arrange, to do. To make means to cut parts and to rearrange them in another arrangement. Krit is to cut, direct meaning. Gri is to call, to recite, to swallow. It's like glossa, but we have gv, this particular meaning of language. Gl. Tri is also to overcome, to pass, tara, from here, stella, the star. Yes, tri, tri, tara is overcoming, growing to another shore. Dri is to tear, to break asunder. Mri is to die. Mridge, to cleanse. Vri, to choose. To choose to cut out of the whole some part of it. To cut it for yourself. To cover it for yourself. To choose to cover. I'm just trying to look with you into that, how these varnas present particular significances within the root system. And it's not so simple, because they are not directly relating for our mind, which is distinguishing and cutting everything into pieces, to see it. It's nearly impossible for this smaller mind to do it. But when it is widening and seeing this flood, these varnas, it can distinguish these meanings within the roots. Now, in the combinations, there will be interesting development. If I combine E and Wu and Ri and Ah, I will have all these other meanings, Ya, Va, Ra, La, Yu, Ir, and so on and so forth. I will not overload you with all this material. If you want to look into it, look for yourself. I will go to more systematic overview now, and we will finish on this. If I take root U, it's the most interesting root to look, to see how this significance of Varna is reflected in the lexem. So root U has two meanings of dividing and uniting, two different meanings, to unite and to divide. And it consists of two simple varnas, E and U. E is the varna which is one-pointed tendency towards the goal, and U has a connotation of duality. So if U is uniting, holding two within one, then it is U. Now holding, I'm showing, I'm one E, and this is my U, U lips, U labial. I hold two in one, and this holding two in one can be of two different kinds. If I proceed from myself to duality, it is dividing. And if I proceed from their duality towards myself, it is uniting. So this device can be applied as division and union in both ways. It depends in what context it is found. So root huge, for example, to yoke, to join, to apply, this kind of having connotation of union, use, mix, fix, anything, anything you find in this application of this root. And I told already last time that yoga has 150 meanings in Monier Film Dictionary. All of them are just, it's an open list. And you can find more meanings, you can make more meanings for this root. I know the material is quite tough, so I don't want you to be fully falling asleep. If you want to have some explanations or questions, I already see I kind of do something wrong to you with all this material. But let us endure it for a while. We will come to light again through this tonal of looking into this. So I was defining these four varnas. A conscious attempt to articulate meaning of undifferentiated state of movement or quality. It appears to correspond to a sound R. A conscious attempt to articulate the meaning of a particular relative sense or movement or quality E, and so on and so forth. These are Sri Aurobindo's definitions. Existence, relative existence, interrelated existence, constant existence, resisting every possible obstacle, and Li, it's very similar to Ri, which is more gliding, sliding, rather than breaking through. So what I did, I took from the dictionary similar roots with the same consonant and compared their meanings. So I took Da, Di, Du, Dri. I wanted to see how these varnas work if D is the same. Dha, Dhi, Dhu, Dhri, Bha, Bhi, Bhu, Bhri. And I found the regularity is throughout the system. So I will take few easier cases for us to dwell on, which will be more significant to see. Bha, Bhi, Bhu, Bhri. Bha, to appear, to shine. Bhi, to fear, to be tense. Bhu, to become, to occupy new space. And Bhri, to bear. Now you see in all of them there is one particular significance. Bha gives an establishment of the being, and this establishment of the being with A is an appearance of some kind or self-representation, whereas Bhi is a tense state of being or fear, shrinking of the being. Bhu is overflowing of the being into space, occupying new space and dimensions of space within oneself. And Bhri is to bear oneself in spite of every resistance. I take Ma. Ma, to measure, to create, from Ma, Mother, from here, Matri, Maya, the creative force, which is measuring out of this immeasurable something, measured and well-organized existence. Me, to measure but to diminish, to cut out and to make it small, whereas Ma doesn't have this diminishing faculty to significance. Mu, it's wrong here. Also to measure, but already to bind and to mingle in. There will be already medial relation with something which is there in the space. And Mri, to die. And here I will leave you with Mri, to die, to think why it can have that meaning. It cannot be answered immediately. At least not in this session. So I put all those possible roots for comparing their meanings and see how Varna is working throughout in a systematic way. So I want to finish this story for today because I know it's already too much. I cannot bring this to you in a coherent way because it requires dwelling. And this is the material which is not open and revealed, it's hidden. You have to do that internal study and look at it again and again. And then you will find the beauty of Sanskrit, that it is regular with varna, with a sound reflecting a particular significance. But then you will have to disassociate yourself from contextual usage. Every contextual usage is a partial, brings partial significance of the root. It's not really that root and its meaning. It is only used significance, which we fixed in our mind. And we operate now by used significances. We are not able anymore to derive and make new words from the system of etymons. But most probably one time, one day, we will break to the higher mind and will be able to create our own words from the system of those etymons or that Brihaspati speech which is always sounding there with its own color. Poets can feel this subtlety of the significance in the sound. They choose special words because they feel that they reflect more of that significance. How do they know that? By what means they distinguish that this word is more suitable than another word with the same significance. So it's a subtle faculty of our consciousness to distinguish between these colors and feel that that color is better fitting here.
Is it a kind of, for example, instinct and intuition at the same time? On one level it's an instinct of sound, but also is it a kind of intuition? Yeah. I was wondering because when I work to translate, I do the same thing. But what is it really? But we feel our mother tongue is in us now already in subconsciousness, and then we pull out certain things of that language. We think it's used more to that context when we do it, you know, as a kind of meditation or effort. As if the possibilities are there within the language, in a sense, because of this system.
I think this is a universal system which we all use. I even did such an interesting study in historical perspective. I saw how roots are going away from their meaning into the context where they applied and have different significances, close to losing their connection with the root. But then they drop that significance and come back to mean again that where they are coming from. They are not free. The words are not free from the etymological meaning. They are all bound together and reflect something of that meaning. So even if they deviate far into the context which is farther from their meaning, they will drop that meaning at one point of time and come back. It's a very interesting thought to see it in this way. So there is something like a definition within this particular apparatus to articulate certain meanings in a distinct way for us. I think I'm claiming too much, because if I take any other language like Chinese, or they have an absolutely different system of meaning, which is not related to this particular articulatory device. They do not have this articulatory device. Can you imagine? It's another language altogether. It's more visual language, which picked up already sounds in a different way. All their sounds are very different. But if we speak about within the realms of Indo-European languages and Semitic languages, we will see that these articulatory devices are very important. it's the most difficult subject of all. So we try to do it. Syntax will be for us very easy and interesting, because we will see how our structure, our mind defines structures of language. But here we have nothing to define. There is no ground on which we can stand except this etymological system, which is here in this simple alphabet. This is the first etymological system and the last, and there is no other. This is the system of etymons, simple articulatory devices, and they are all meaningful. Yes.
Just to say, language researchers that try to decipher languages, do they have to learn the system or a similar system like this?
Unfortunately, the whole linguistics went into allophonic direction, and everybody tries to find natural sounding as the ground. Yeah? A natural sound is not the ground. That's why Varnaspota is so essential. Varnaspota deals with sounds as mentally articulated and not as they are articulated in the apparatus. Because if we concentrate on this, how they are articulated here as natural sounds, we have no way out. There are varieties, endless varieties, and nobody knows anymore what is what. There are hundreds and thousands of sounds compared and compared again and again and again, and it's endless, and there is no ground on which you can firmly sit. This is the ground, Varnaspota.
But I should think in that case there wouldn't be any connection between the different researchers. Normally make a translation of a strange language this way, the other one would make it in a different way, and it seems that there's some points in which they can kind of narrow down things.
What I did is something illegal. I take the Sanskrit language as the original system. Yes, nobody takes Sanskrit language in that way.
Doesn't that make much more sense? For example, our professor who was came to Ur, the Austrian gentleman, he told me there is a book by somebody which gives three sounds like something, klang, kum, bang, you know, three consonant sounds as the basis of all sounds. And then you wonder really when you know this system, how can that make sense? You know, that somebody picks out three consonant sounds, then he wants to show you that everything comes only from these sounds. Mm-hmm. This seems to be what many people do, that they are really, you know, picking out something and trying to put everything there, and sometimes in a very artificial way. So I don't know why there is not this connection. It's a good question why they narrow down to one
point. Find out
what the other languages mean. Could you show the page for spatial relationships? I think it was for...
It's 444.
So this system, of course, I also feel it's something experimental, yes. For example, because I'm using it. I'm working
on the statements of how it works.
Let me show you
this one. So, one, two, there are only three.
Five. Fifth is Lee.
Constant existence, similar nature. Interrelated, relative, and pure.
Yes. You can immediately see these four aspects of the mother. Mahashakti, Mahakali, Mahalakshmi, Mahasarasvati. You can see Sat, Chit, Ananda and Vijnana. It's in that particular frame of thinking. There is Sat in existence which is undefined, undifferentiated. There is a differentiation to it, very relative, narrowed, forceful. This is E, pressing to the palate. Expanding, all-inclusive, and the Ri, working upon the limit within the point, the Sarasvati of the detail.
These qualities or spatial aspects are not just the basis of language, they're also the basis of perception.
Yes, psychological activity.
It's the logical, it's the basis of logical, spatial existence.
Very true. That's why they were defined by Indra. Indra is first grammarian who created this Varnamala. He cut them into this particular way because the apparatus is like this. There is a relation to our articulatory device which creates this psychological significance while we articulate E and A. There is a difference within the state of our own. It's
not. I'm thinking specifically of the way that we perceive the world.
Right.
I'm not thinking mythologically at this moment. If you think that some things occur before other things in time and space, so that's a relative existence. And some things cause or result from another thing, and that's an interrelated existence.
Right.
And some things are always the same whenever they recur.
Yes.
And that's constancy.
Yes.
And some things are either different, different with respect to time, or different with respect to space, or different with respect to weight or mass, or the same. So these are the fundamental relationships that define objects in perception.
Yes. Language is of that kind.
It is the nature of
consciousness.
Existence.
Yes. It's how consciousness perceives existence. And language is, or speech is of that kind. So these are, and these are definitions of Sri Aurobindo. So in a way, he already put everything into it. And it is throughout Sanskrit language is regular. So it means that there are foundations of that deeper philosophy behind, yeah? Within the language, within this particular way of sounding words.
At the same time that Sri Aurobindo was formulating this understanding, it was also being formulated by others as the fundamental logical structure of not only language but existence.
Yeah, well, we formulate everything by language, unfortunately, so we can't be free from it, even formulating existence.
I'm thinking of Whitehead, though. Yeah. You know, Whitehead attempted to define everything that's possible to be defined in terms of finite language, symbolic language. And it was based exactly on these kinds of relationships.
I don't think even we can have other relationships in a way.
No, there are no relationships. So that's why I'm saying it's existence itself which is determining this system of consciousness.
No, I'm very glad that we can see this. Once we see this, that makes it, this language is philosophical from the Varna supporter level, not from other later structures. Yes? Not formulating by the mind, but within the language it's inbuilt. And we will see also in syntax how it is inbuilt, the same vision, how it is inbuilt in avyaya system of all the avyayas, how it is dealing with space and time relations within the language, also within the verb system, within the noun system. It's all very philosophical and very transparent and regular. In that sense, it's not really fully natural language.
So it would mean more like a some person who had this consciousness, they use the language. So it's a language of somebody who had this consciousness, you would say?
Maybe the most natural language.
That's a good idea.
Yes.
I'm speaking not natural against Prakritam, the languages which were, how to say, loose in their evolution, and they build up their own kind of mixed This language is very regular and it keeps up to this particular meaning and to these roots. It's the only language, by the way, which preserved the complete, more or less, system of etymons. And because of that, this language does not require any other language to explain its own derivations. Just think about that simple fact. So it does not require any other language to explain its own derivations. It relates to its own system of etymology.